This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back to the None and Ever podcast and football show. I'm your host, Natalie Bromley, and this week it is another mashup of an analysis show and a preview show. The Clarets are coming to their fifth defeat of the season already away at Newcastle. We'll also be previewing Luton away, which now is looking like a massive win already so soon in the season. We are joined by a very special analyst, and Dave's here to give us all of the stats and facts ahead of that game. So, let's go. So let's kick off straight away, guys. I'm going to bring in our usual statistician, Dave Statman Roberts. First, Dave, welcome, welcome. Come round very quickly.
Yeah, midweek game. We don't get too many of those in the Premier League, but obviously the it was the fact the they couldn't guarantee the ground was going to be ready. We've just had a short delay, so yes, we finally get to go back to Kenilworth Road, the new Kenilworth Road.
The new Kenilworth, the new fancy Kenilworth Road with Premier League money. And I did tease at the beginning of the show that we are going to be joined by a very special analyst this week. Ladies and gentlemen, it is. I feel like we need a drum roll for this, Dave. We are throwing it back to 2018. He's had an extended sabbatical, which basically means he's been really rubbish and not been on for ages. Welcome back to the None and Ever podcast, Robbie Coppack. Robbie, where have you been? We missed you.
I miss you too. I mean, the Dutch football sort of got the end of me. The COVID season killed me off. Yeah, and then it was a little bit, I needed a break. And then, you know, Vincent Kompany's football's drawn me back in. We've had a bit of a tough start, but I'm still cautiously optimistic, still have a decent season.
Yeah, me too. Well, we'll come on to that in a minute. It's very lovely to have you back. I'm glad that you had a break. It happens to all of us sometimes. And I know you just needed to step away, and you are part of the None and Ever family, so you are still with us. It's very lovely to have you back. We are, of course, going to be previewing Luton away, which is already looking like a relegation six-pointer already, and we are going to give you a quiz question. Before we get on to that, though, Robbie, we are going to come to you first. I'm excited because I've got you back. The Clarets succumbing to a 2-0 loss at the weekend away at Newcastle. Fifth loss of the season out of only six games played. We sit second from bottom of the table with just 1 point and 11 goals conceded. Quite the contrast to this time last year when Vincent Kompany's team were starting to find their feet in the Championship and go on that seamlessly never-ending running streak. Let's kick us off then. I mean, I think on paper, the result was probably as expected. We knew from these opening fixtures that we were going to get very few points from these opening six games. And actually, realistically, we're probably on about the amount of points we thought we would be. But at the moment, it's the manner of the defeat that's a little bit concerning. Confidence is waning from the side. There doesn't seem to be a lot of lessons being learned from the top or on the pitch. Are we being unduly harsh to be worried here, or is this just the reality of these fixtures?
I think it's a tough one. I think if you've split the six games we've played in half, I think we have developed. I think from the opening three games to the last three games, we have seen improvements. I think we've gone from losing from the whole side being naive to losing games from individuals being naive. And it's almost, I'm getting a sense of comfort from it that I think individual errors can be ironed out. I think the first one with Ramsey, Donald's on the ball. I think 9 times out of 10, he doesn't do that. And again, I sort of said it when Fernandez scored when we played United. You're happy for Almiron to shoot from there because 9 times out of 10, it probably goes over the bar or Trafford has an easy save. It's just one of those goals, again, that has a 1% chance of going in. It goes right into the top corner and we've been punished.
Yeah.
And we were playing really well at that point. You know, first 15 minutes, we were the better side and we concede and then heads drop.
And you've mentioned that before, actually, haven't you, Robbie? When you feel that when one goal, yeah, we're all right when we nil nil, but once a goal goes in, the floodgates open. You've noticed that, right?
Yeah, I think we get a bit. I can't quite put my finger on it, but it happened against Villa as well. I felt against in the Spurs game that like we started. The Spurs were electric at the start. We got an early goal, and then the equaliser came pretty shortly after. And then we're on the ropes up until, and then Romero made it 2-1 at half time. And I think again, heads drop. We come out second half against Spurs, we just didn't turn up.
Yeah.
And it was on, and we saw it against Newcastle where Almiron scores that goal, heads drop. And we're on the ropes up until half time. And we were very, very fortunate. It was only 1-0. And we're in the game up until, 70 minutes, but we didn't really lay a glove.
No. Of course, the exception for that, Robbie, was of course the United game at home where we still carried on after they'd scored to be the better side and we were for most of it. Now, I think there's two things for that. I think the predominantly the problem with that is that United were very, very poor, which leads us on to another point, which you and I talked about offline, is that we've often relied in our survival seasons on being able to pick up bonus points from some of the bigger sides. Yeah, for City, Villa, Spurs, Newcastle, no, I just don't think we're ever going to. But that United side at home at Turf Moor was absolutely there for the taking and we just didn't we didn't grasp it.
Yeah, I think United were happy for us to have the ball. I think United were happy to sit in a shape. They had what they needed. I think they knew they were going to have to come to us and grind it out. So they sat in a low block in a flat back four with proper defenders in there and just thought, we're happy for you to pass sideways. That's fine, you know, because come and break us down and we just didn't have the ability to do it. And I felt like Newcastle were very similar, where I think they got into the lead and we struggled to really gain any form of authority or sustain any pressure on them.
That's hard to do, though, isn't it, when you're at the bottom of the side? You know, we've gone from being the best side in the league last year and being able to absolutely dominate everybody to completely the opposite and being the worst side, well, one of the worst sides in the division. And we've got players who haven't yet gelled, who are quite young and experienced, and I'm gonna put it out there and see what we're thinking here. Is Vincent Kompany adding to this slight lack of cohesion by tinkering a little bit with tactics, not really putting a very clear strategy on the games, playing players out of position? I think in the None and Ever newsletter this week, our editor Jamie Smith raises the question mark around why we were playing central midfielders out of position. You know, he's only just finally got it to twig that, you know, if we play a left-back at left-back, then that's a good thing. So now he's starting to play other players out of position. Why is that? Is he still just not sure of what his best side is, or is it just inexperience from him as well for the league?
Possibly. I mean, it's always said we have a bit of hindsight in terms of selection and stuff. I think individually, our starting 11, like player by player, they're all really good footballers.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no denying it. Like Aaron Ramsey, clear as day, what his
so
talent
good.
Is. And Am Dooney as well, Sander Berge. I think to stay in this league, I think we've got it the wrong way around. I think you need to have 8 or 9 players who are just consistently give you like 7 8s out of 10s and you know exactly what you're going to get. And then you'd have, like, we've always been reliant on, like, a Dwight McNeil and Chris Wood to get our goals historically. And I think this time, we've got it the other way around, how we've got 8 or 9 really good players who could easily win a game for us, but don't have that same, like,
grittiness.
Yeah, so when we're really under the cosh and you need to go, right, okay, let's just sit in a low block, let's just calm down, let's just do the basics. I don't think we do that very well.
With too many luxury players,
haven't we? Yeah. I just think you need 8 or 9 really good, solid individuals, really good professionals. I'm not saying our squad isn't that, but I just think they're very individual and they want to win games.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, they don't seem to be gelling as a unit yet. I don't see... Yeah. I don't see a body of 11 players working to the same strategy, working as one, everybody in tune, knowing where everybody's going to be. I can see pockets of individual partnerships. I think Bayer and Trafford are starting to get to know each other a little bit better. Cullen's now, you know, I'm seeing little pockets of relationships, but not a coherent side.
Yeah.
Whereas we have seen in previous seasons a bulk of players who can literally sit in and say, like, you know, Stephen Defoe, you go off, Dwight McNeil, you go off, do what you want. Those luxury flair players. It's still a new side, though. They've only played 6 Premier League games together. We've got a load of new players in, so maybe it will come. Okay, one final point then before we move on to preview this must-win Luton game. I have a question that's coming from a listener for you, by the way, Dave, which I think you might know what it might be. I've thrown myself off now. What was I going to say? Blah, blah, blah. So, yes. So, we've now had to play 5 really tough fixtures, which, bear in mind, our relegation peers haven't yet had to meet. Fair enough. You know, Wolves got a bonus win against City, which is a little bit frustrating. And Luton obviously got that bonus win. But again, it's off a relegation rival. We still have got to start playing the mid to bottom end tables of the sides. Are you still then, when you talk to the opening of the show, cautiously optimistic, do you still think that we can perform very well against those sides and therefore judge us after you've seen us play then?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Forest game was a good indication. And that's the only that's the only sample size we have. So
twice. I think we're beating in the league and
Of course. I didn't watch the cup game. I'm not too sure how we played, but from what we've said in like WhatsApp groups and stuff, it sounds fairly promising. But the Luton one's going to be an awkward one because they're really strong on set pieces. And I really worry about us on set pieces.
We're terrible at set pieces.
Even when we the Premier League game against Forest, we looked like conceding from our own corners.
Yeah, we
have a corner. It's like, oh, you rub your hands together, and then Forest had counter on 2 of them and nearly scored this.
It's so true. That is so true. It is
frightening. And you look at what Luton did with set pieces against Everton, against Sean Dyche, Everton with Onana and Tarkowski.
Who should be good at set pieces. Yeah.
Who generally really are. Dyche has always been really good at defending set pieces in both boxes. So to see what Luton did, score from 2 set pieces against Sean Dyche's team, and then you think, oh God, Carlton Morris against James Trafford inside that 6-yard box. I'm trembling already.
Okay, well, hold that tremble then. We'll give you a chance to get, because we're going to come back to the Luton game later on. But yeah, for now, let's leave Newcastle and let's leave our league scratching of our heads and let's move on to that game. Before we get there, Dave, of course, we have a quiz question, which we're going to give to our listeners. Now, those of you who've been listening and paying attention this season, you will know that we no longer give you a quiz question at the end of the show to go away and submit an answer. We give you it at the beginning and we give you the answer at the end, so you need to pay attention. So following a theme, I presume is the same. Dave, what have you asked our listeners to keep an eye out for this week, please?
Yeah, we're interested in testing your knowledge of players who spent time at Burnley and our next opponent. So out of 22 players who've represented both teams since the Second World War, there are 5 who've played 50 or more league matches for both Burnley and Luton Town. And this time, 3 of those 5 have gone one better and have chalked up over 100 league appearances for both clubs. So we want to know how many of the 5 players you can name, and can you identify which 3 of those 5 achieved 100 or more league appearances for both?
Lovely. We will give you the answer at the end of the show. Now, before we move on to preview that show, Dave, we've had a question coming from one of our listeners, Adam Bromley, a name that may well be familiar to some of our regular listeners. His question is, dear preview show, ask Dave whether this is a must-win game. His fans need to know. Dave, is this a must-win game?
Well, I preempted this. I did a little Twitter poll to see if it's still open actually. If anyone's interested in looking at my Twitter feed and reply and
flood it with yeses.
Well, there were three options. It was like Burnley at Luton on Tuesday night? Must win. Option one. Yes. Must not lose. Option two or three. Seriously, it's October. So they were the three.
Nobody
options.
Pressed option three, did they? Because that's silly.
I think we were just slightly over 50% were it's a must-win game, despite it being October. And in their defence, I will say that even though technically it's not a must-win game, if we're going to survive this season, Burnley must win probably at least 10 matches. And this is going to be one of the matches we need to win. So that's as far as I'm going to go with that answer.
I've never heard you go that far with that, Dave. So I'm taking that as a yes. Let's move on. We're going to be looking away. Luton Town away. It is Tuesday, the 3rd of October, 7:30 kickoff. Not televised anywhere, but this is, of course, a rearranged fixture from the second game of the season. Dave, you're going to kick us off, please, with your match results summary.
Summarising past away league matches against Luton Town. Most of our league meetings against them have been outside of the top flight. This season's only our seventh together in the top division after a gap of almost 50 years. And of course, it's the first in the Premier League era. Burnley and Luton have spent 24 previous seasons together, and we have more wins than losses from our away trips in the league. There have been 11 Burnley wins, 10 defeats and just 3 draws. In terms of goals scored, Burnley have found the net 36 times in those matches and conceded 40.
Excellent. And first of our new features then for this first half of the season, one to remember, one to forget. We're going to be looking at a couple of past matches in a feature which, as it says on the tin, gives us one that is one we want to remember and one we'd quite like to retire to the archives forever. Dave, kick us off, please, with one to remember.
Oh, and it's worth saying as well, they are interchangeable. So for any Luton fans listening, our one to forget will be theirs to remember. Of course.
Yes. I'm just in the script. Are you going with one to forget first?
From a Burnley perspective, yes. That's the way I've done it this time.
Go ahead.
So we're going to get the one to forget from a Burnley perspective out of the way first. And you have to go all the way back to February 1959 for our heaviest defeat at Kenilworth Road. After taking the lead through John Connelly in the 16th minute, Burnley conceded 3 times before the break and 3 more afterwards to trail 6-1 before netting a late consolation from Brian Miller to make it 6-2. Scoring a hat-trick for the home side was inside forward Alan Brown. That's Alan with 2 L's, the Scottish former Blackpool player, not the former Burnley manager. The Burnley Express match report stated that Luton were flattered by the margin of victory, but I guess you can't really argue with such a comprehensive scoreline.
No, definitely not. So which one are we doing for the one to remember then? Let's get back to nice.
Right, well, on to better times. And there are plenty of away wins at Kenilworth Road to choose from. We mentioned already there's 11 in all, as well as last season's narrow 1-0 win. We've previously covered a memorable 3-2 win with 10 men from November 2005. So just for a change, we're going to choose a different match, which is our last top flight visit to play Luton Town at Kenilworth Road. That was in November 1974. Ray Hankin gave Burnley the lead with a trademark header just after the half-hour mark, but Luton Town's John Faulkner equalised with another header just 6 minutes later to make it 1-1 at the break. And then there was a flurry of goals just after half-time. Leighton James put Burnley back into the lead after 49 minutes, but it took Luton just 2 minutes to level the scores at 2-2 with a Peter Spiring header. It was only another 2 minutes before Burnley took the lead again as Ray Hankin put the finishing touch to a low cross from Leighton James to make it 3-2, and that was the way it stayed.
Lovely. Well, you know that we don't like to make you take our word for it. We like to give you some opposition views on our podcast. This week, we spoke to All When The Town podcast, who gave us their views ahead of the game.
Hello, my name's Dave from Oh and the Town. Since winning the playoffs, Luton Town have had a bit of a roller coaster ride, really. Getting the money from the Premier League has literally saved our club, and every Luton Town fan is under no illusion how hard it will be for our club to stay in the Premier League. But we're going to give it a good go. Signings for the summer quite unreal, really. If you consider that before we got promoted, our highest ever transfer in was £1.2 million or £2 million for Carlton Morris. And we've broken the transfer record four or five times over the summer, yet probably still haven't spent as much as Burnley or Sheffield United or even any of the other teams than they have on one player, let alone five or six. So I think we brought in about 10. Our best signings for me is Chio Ogbeni. You've got to look out for him. Super fast, just been told, but he is the fastest player in the Premier League, which is unbelievable. Marvellous Nakamba, who we took from Villa on loan last season, has been pivotal in our success last season, and he's continuing on with that form as well. A couple of others, Ryan Giles, Chong from Birmingham, all signings that on paper are pretty good for us and showing quite well at the moment. We're under no illusion that this staying in this division is going to be super hard, especially for Luton Town, given our size and status. And like every fan and every club is looking at Luton Town as a banker for a win. As long as people keep underestimating us, we'll just keep plodding along. And at the moment, you know, we're the only newly promoted team to have won a game. Now, I expect that's down to who we've played against, to who they've you guys have played and who Sheffield United have played. But we're not as bad as everybody thinks. And I think that's the key for us. We will get better. We have been improving since the start of the season. Pretty tough start for us. Brighton away. Brighton were flying at the time. West Ham, we were unlucky against. Fulham, we should have won. We had many, many opportunities to win that game. And of course, our first Premier League win at the weekend against Everton, although somewhat tainted by, again, Everton fans thinking that we were still rubbish, and we still managed to beat them 2-1. With regards to playing Burnley, we had a couple of good games last season. I think they were quite tight, especially at Turf Moor, when we actually started quite well up there. Our home game went, let's be honest, Burnley were the best team in the league by a country mile, was very tight, and we managed to stay with you for most of the game. And you know, we gave you two good games. So I'm hoping that on Tuesday night, we do have a few opportunities to win, you know, to score. It's going to be very, very tight. But I'm just hoping that we can just bounce on with the win from the win that we had at the weekend, because games between clubs like ours at the moment in the position we're in, for both clubs, are becoming must-win games, because we know how difficult it is to beat the top six, the established Premier League teams. So I'm predicting it's going to be very, very tight. And I'm hoping, you know, obviously it's a heart and head thing here, I'm hoping that my heart says that Luton can do enough to win the game, even by the odd goal. But let's be fair, it's not going to be any pushover. I think a very tight game. I hope we can win. And yeah, let's go for 1-0. But I'll take anything as long as we get something out of the game.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And the referee details, please, Dave.
We've got Peter Banks of Liverpool. He's taken charge of the newly revamped Kenilworth Road on Tuesday evening. The first time he refereed a Burnley match was for our 2-1 away win at Rotherham United in early October 2015, and the only other Burnley victory in seven previous matches was a comfortable 3-0 away win at QPR last December. He was also the referee for one other match last season. That was the 1-1 draw at Deepdale just over a year ago. Overall, Burnley have 2 wins, 3 draws and 2 defeats in Peter Banks' previous 7 matches. And to date, he's managed to keep his red cards in his pocket. Helping him out with the technology, hopefully, will be Michael Salisbury, who's been appointed as the video assistant referee for this fixture.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting looking at the referees, Robbie, at the moment. They're just referees and VAR and everything are just under unbelievable microscopic scrutiny at the moment. I haven't seen it yet. I've bookmarked it to have a look, so I was away this weekend. But just the absolute nonsense from this weekend is absolutely getting people with quite powerful voices just to call for VAR to be scrapped. I can't understand why we suddenly feel like we're in a worse shape than we were before.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been an advocate for VAR. I've always been a fan of it. I'd rather it, you know, you get 99% of decisions right, despite how long they take. But the one at the week on Saturday night is...
Is it bad?
I sympathise it. It's just a complete lack of miscommunication where Diaz has scored for Liverpool. The referee called it offside, but the team at VAR think he's given a goal. So they've gone, check complete. Check complete, it's a goal. But
he never gave the goal because he thought it was offside?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
So of course, if they're only saying check complete, he thinks that VAR are saying check complete, it's offside, you were right.
Yeah.
It gets worse than that, though.
Oh, no. Tell me.
They then realise that that's happened because they kicked off straight away. But they've kind of sat on their hands because they said, the protocols say that we can't then get involved and say anything. So the referee supposedly, although there is debate on this, didn't find out until half time. It's just a farce from start to finish, really.
They were doing a good analysis on it on Monday Night Football before we started where they've shown it's basically an image of the referee after he's always been told in his ear, they're saying, we've cocked up.
Let him have a goal if they want one.
And his face is like, you can tell he's in trouble.
But that's not the referee's fault.
No, it's not.
So why is he here? He should be fired, just like you idiots.
Yeah, it's Darren England on VAR.
Well, say no more. I mean, the irony of the VAR was brought in to clear up clear and obvious errors. They are not only not clearing up clear and obvious errors, they are clearing up errors that are so not clear and obvious that they're taking 5 minutes to do. And then the really obvious clear and obvious error that they make straight away, they don't have the remit to what?
They should have broken protocol. In hindsight, they should have broken protocol and gone, pull it back. We've messed up.
If they've just done it, they can literally just say, whoa, what are you doing? And they can just stop straight away and say, no, I'm really sorry. Yeah, fair enough. The fans in the ground will whinge and everybody will boo it because it's teching the thing. But I agree with you, Robbie.
How to get a decision right.
Correct. In purely objective decisions where there is a right and there is a wrong, VAR has got to be used to do that. So, excellent. Anyway, let's move on.
The quality of the communication between the on-pitch officials and the officials at Stockley Park is just as bad as the level of communication from the officials to the crowd.
Yeah, that's fair. That's true.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's a little comfort. It's a little comfort right now, but yeah, I get your point, Dave. So, Luton game. We've already had Dave admitting that this is a must-win game, Robbie. We probably could have done without Luton having that massive confidence boosting win against fellow relegation rivals Everton. It is away from home. Not that Turf Moor has been particularly comfortable for us so far. This is our first proper test. I think Forest away was a more winnable game, a more technically even game. But I don't expect Forest will be towards the bottom. I think they'll probably be 13th, 14th, 12th maybe. Luton will be around the bottom all season. Just sum up how on earth you're feeling ahead of this game.
Uh, I want it over and done with, to be honest.
Over and done with the 3 points on the board. Thank you. Let's move
ideally, yeah. You know, you've got that sort of anxiety where it's like, I just want it just get to 10 o'clock on Tuesday.
Almost
night,
can't watch it. Yeah.
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 I think it is a must win, but I don't think it's a must win as in it will define our season. I'm more seeing it from more of a short-term perspective where I'm expecting us to get beat by Chelsea the week after.
Yeah.
And the thought of going into a second international break still without a win will weigh down on us more and more.
Yeah.
And then you sort of going into the... I sort of don't like the idea of going to Brentford away or Bournemouth away. I'm not sure if there's a game in between that. Still without a win.
Brentford.
Yeah. The idea of going into one of those again without a win, and then you're going into November, December.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think then you are really in deep trouble.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as well, if we do beat Luton and we go into that international break, we have played seven games, five of whom were against teams that traditionally we should never expect to get any. And we got 4 points from two Premier League away games, which is that's probably 2 points more than, you know, they say draw your away games, don't they, and try and win your home ones. So that'll be a decent return to go with 4 points on there. How much of a miss has Lyle Foster been? And I'm assuming we put him straight back in the side on Tuesday.
Yeah, we miss his physicality. I think we've really, you probably mentioned it hundreds of times, but his development over the last
eight, nine
months, he's got a completely different player. He's literally got everything where he's got that strength to hold the ball up on his chest or his feet, really good in the air. And he's also got turn of pace as well to like spin the defender. And he was really good at Forest. I don't think his performance, because Colley Osho was really good and Amdouni got the goal. I think they took a lot of the plaudits. But Lyle Foster was man of the match that night. He was really, really good. And he had a slight moment of madness. And I think we really missed him against Man United in particular. I think with Lyle Foster in that second half, I think it's a completely different Burnley. And again, I think we missed him at Newcastle as well. So like when we're on the cosh, we need someone to play off. And I think Andoni did a really good job like leading the line with what he can do, but
He's not a number nine, though, is he?
Yeah, he likes to drop deep and be sort of a false nine, number 10 type player. Yeah. You can see that with the way he plays. As Lyle Foster gives you that something different. And I think Luton away actually suits his style as well.
Yes.
So I'm actually hoping that he can be a difference for us.
Yeah, you look at that. If we have an attacking threat of Colley Osho, Andoni and Lyle Foster, it shouldn't really matter if Luton try and attack us on the set pieces, because they shouldn't be able to get that much, you know, the attack should be our defence. It really, really should. And I just feel like we could be strong enough and just hit them with that high press. I think we can afford to press a little higher against Luton because they shouldn't have as much of a threat from open play in midfield and their forward attack. Bayer can be pushing forward a little bit more. He's not been able to go on those runs that we like and press the ball out anymore, just because it leaves us too exposed. So he should be able to have a bit more freedom that way. Connor Roberts should have the freedom in midfield, which he seems to be loving these days. and that should be our strategy. One question mark, and there's an absolute battle going on social media about this with Burnley fans very much stuck in two camps with this. Is it time to let Muric have a chance at goal? Where do you sit on this? Are you still?
I'm Team Trafford, 100%. I understand the argument. I think Muric is really, really unlucky.
Yeah.
I do feel for him. Obviously, Vince Kompany obviously wanted an upgrade. He obviously feels that James Trafford is an upgrade. I think Trafford is a better goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I think it's neck and neck on distribution. I think Muric probably edges it. But I think Trafford is getting better game by game.
Yeah. One of the points that's been highlighted as being a potential flaw in Trafford's play is that Trafford doesn't seem to command his box as well as Muric does. He doesn't feel like he's as a physical, strong presence. But I'm not entirely sure Muric defends, like, commands his space much more than that either. Yeah, he's taller and physically, he's an older guy, he's taller and physically stronger. But that's... that's biology. That's not nothing to do with his talent. I think that's an unfair barometer.
I think if you go back 12 months on any forum, I think everyone was saying the same thing about Muric in terms of, you know, when we started last season, when we went on that little run where we'd be 1-0 up and failure to kill games off, and then we conceded like a late equaliser. It was like, I think that's Stoke at home and Hull at home. It was like a little, like four games on the bounce or something like that. And there were a lot of critics towards Muric around his. He never seemed to save anything.
No,
he had very little to do, and he never kept the ball at the net. Is that we'd concede like three shots, one on target and one on goal in.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I do remember that a lot of his critics was around commanding the box and coming out for crosses and stuff like that. And a lot of people were calling for Peacock Farrell to start games. So.
Oh, yeah, that's true. God, yeah, I do remember that at the beginning of last season.
So what we're seeing with Trafford is exactly what we're seeing with Muric, where I think that's where my patience is coming in, where I'm like going, what we're seeing with James Trafford right now is exactly what we're having with Muric. It's just teething problems. I'm hoping that they will sort themselves out.
Fingers crossed. Give me a score prediction then, please, Robbie.
Oh, God. I'll say 1-1.
Come on.
I never bet on Burnley, you know. I never bet on Burnley to win.
Why does it never come in?
Just in terms of like a better
superstition.
Yeah, superstition, and it's a win-win for me. So I always put us on to lose.
I'm not asking you to put any money on it. I'm just asking you for a score prediction.
You get a bit of compo for me.
I'm not going to ask for your bank details, Robbie, after you finish this call.
I'll say a 1-1 draw. I think it'll be a very cagey game, and I think we'll concede from set piece.
Dave, your score prediction, please.
Honestly. I better be the positive one then and go for a 2-1 win.
Yes, that's what I love. Well done. I tell you, since you were last on the show, Dave's a completely different person, Robbie. He's suddenly gone all positive now. He's started predicting wins and everything. I don't really know what to do with myself. I'm going to be in Camp Dave and I'm going to go even more positive. I think this is the game where Burnley get that confidence and they play with a swagger. I'm going to say 3-1-2 Burnley. I agree with Robbie. I think we'll probably be vulnerable to conceding at a set piece, but I think we'll ultimately be too strong for them. Listeners, do send us your score predictions. You know how to get in touch with us, or comment if you're watching this via our YouTube show. We would love to hear from you, please. Dave, can you finish off then the Luton preview with your miscellaneous stat of the week, please?
Yeah, I've got a good omen, really, from stat of the week. There can't be too many away grounds where Burnley have won on all of their last three previous most recent visits. But Kenilworth Road is one of those grounds. As well as a narrow 1-0 win there last season, we won 2-0 in the Championship in October 2006, as well as a 3-2 win in November 2005 with a hat-trick from Adiyakin Bayi. In fact, if you go back a little bit further, Burnley have won 6 of our most recent 8 previous matches at Kenilworth Road, all in the league over a period of around 30 years, stretching back to 1994.
Lovely stuff. Well, that is all we have time for in terms of the Luton preview. We're all going to be on tenterhooks tomorrow night. So if you do want to join us in a social media watch along for those who aren't at Kenilworth Road, we can go through it together. It's going to be a collective holding of hands from the Burnley fans. A quick FPL reminder before we finish off. This match is the final fixture of game week 7. It's a double game week for Burnley and Luton. So it is too late to tinker with your team ahead of Tuesday night's game. But for those FPL managers who remembered to flood their team with Luton and Burnley players, well done you. It's also the final Premier League match of September. So in our next FPL update, which Adam is going to send to us shortly, he'll reveal the manager of the month of September, the winner of our much sought after sticker. Oh, I was going to do a show and tell of a sticker, weren't I, Dave? I forgot to bring them. Sorry, I'll do that next week. As well as the latest standings in the None and Ever FPL League. So in the words of Adam, green arrows to you all. Dave, quiz question. I know what that means now. Dave, quiz answers, please. Robbie, did you get any of these? I don't think I know of any Luton and Burnley players.
One player that comes to mind, I'm not convinced he's made over 100 appearances, was Jean-Louis Valois.
Oh, that's a great shout. No, not on.
No.
I'm not that many for us.
I'm not even convinced he played for Luton. He's just in the back of my head. In the back of my head.
You're just like throwing out old school.
I was trying to think of players who play for both, and I was like, I can't think of many, but he was one that pops in my head straight away. I'm not even convinced it's right.
Robbie's determined to turn this into a retro show that has not been on since like 1945. He's going to bring all those players out. I love it. Dave, go on then, give us some answers. I have nothing for you. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, as we said, there's three of the five who've made 100 or more. The other two, Ron Futcher, played 57 times for Burnley, 120 for Luton. Mitchell Thomas just missed out. He played 99 for Burnley and 293 for Luton. But the three players you will remember, definitely will remember, who've played 100 or more league games for both are Graham Alexander, 154 for Burnley, 150 for Luton. Obviously at Luton before he was at Burnley, before he was at Preston. Marlon Beresford, 287 for Burnley.
Oh, we should have got that.
That's annoying me, that one.
Yeah, we should have got that.
116 for Luton. And finally, at top of the list in terms of combined appearances, Steve Davis the second, 327 for Burnley. Again, a couple of spells with Burnley, and then later as a coach, obviously. And then 139 for Luton.
Lovely stuff. Hope you got some of those, listeners. We'll be testing your knowledge again at our next preview show. That is all we have time for. Godspeed to all of our travelling clarets heading down to Kenilworth Road tomorrow. Cheer the boys on, get behind them, and bring that first win of the season back. We will be back. What day is it today? We'll be back on. We probably won't have time to do analysis show separate, so we'll probably do another combined show ahead of the game at the weekend. So join us for that. Keep an eye on social media and we will let you know when they come out. And in the meantime, if you've got any comments or you just want to get in touch, then you can get in touch with us through the usual channels. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the preview show brought to you by the No Name Ever podcast. Until next time.
The No Name Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonanever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.